To the left-hand side for Vieira, who'll play through to Gabriel Jesus, who's in here for Arsenal. Gabriel Jesus to finish it off. Oh, what a way to do it! Gabriel Jesus seals the points for Arsenal. He's back, and he's back with a bang.
Into the penalty area it goes. Gabriel Jesus, and it's into the back of the net. Arsenal take an early lead through Gabriel.
You're listening to the Chronicles of Aguna, the daily Arsenal podcast with me, Harry Simeon.
Hey everybody, how's it going? Hope you're all good. Hope you're all well. Welcome back to another live edition of the Chronicles of Aguna. It's our preview of Arsenal's home fixture with Aston Villa this weekend. Every game feels like a cup final at the moment. There was a little bit of disappointment in the air, I think, after the way, you know, we gave Bayern a couple of really cheap goals on Tuesday night. I think that was kind of overridden, if you like, with positivity after Arsenal, despite, you know, giving Bayern a couple of goals. As I say, Arsenal were able to find a way back into the game and make sure that they went into the second leg, and they go into the second leg next week all square. So there are some positives to take from it. I was a little bit disappointed with the fact that we took the lead the way we did and then conceded those soft, soft goals. And I'm going to keep saying that because they were soft, they were sloppy, and their goals that were avoidable, in my opinion, and given how well Arsenal have defended in 2024, I wasn't expecting to see that, I have to say. You've got to give Bayern their credit because they took those opportunities and those moments when they came their way. That's what sides with bags and bags of individual talent can do to you, even if, as a unit, they're not operating at their kind of premium level at the moment. But look, we put that to one side now because all focus has to be on the Premier League. There is very little margin for error. There is 1 point separating the three teams going for the Premier League title this year. And, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that we have the hardest fixture of the three this weekend. We take on an Aston Villa side under Unai Emery, who, of course, beat us earlier in the season at Villa Park. Now, there was some controversy that evening. Did Kai Havertz's goal deserve to be ruled out, or should that goal have been allowed to stood? I believe it probably should have been allowed to stand. I felt like they micro-analyzed it to the point that they eventually found something out of maybe nothing. But I'm sure Villa fans have a different opinion. I commentated on that game and I thought that Arsenal had the upper hand in so many ways. I thought that Villa played that and I felt like as a result of that, Aston Villa were really exposed at times. But we didn't take advantage of that. You know, the final pass was never right, or, you know, the decision-making wasn't right. I remember coming away from that game thinking decision-making was our biggest problem on that particular evening. But look, forget about that now, because it's about taking on Aston Villa here and making sure that we get maximum points. Now, obviously, we've got the advantage of having played on Tuesday. Aston Villa were in action last night against Lille, and I watched quite a bit of that game in order to try and, you know, put together this preview show to try and figure out what it is that Aston Villa are good at and what it is that maybe Aston Villa are not so good at. I think that Aston Villa have got fantastic forward players, and I think that they've shown this season that they can cut through people, whether that be on the break, whether that be in games where they're the ones with most of the possession and being the aggressors. I think going forward, there are no problems with this Aston Villa side. I think they're as good as most in the division. I think the problem that Aston Villa have is that defensively, they still look a little bit fragile at times. Now, I compare this to what we see from Ange Postecoglou's Tottenham in that they're really, really good in some phases of the game, but there's a lot of work to be done in others. And look, that's fine. It's still pretty early on in Unai Emery's Aston Villa tenure, just like it is in Ange Postecoglou's at Tottenham. And if they got everything right and spot on from the very beginning, well, they'd be competing for the title. But the truth is, none of them are. Villa are a side, though, that have a big say in where the title's going to go. They played Manchester City recently. They were beaten pretty comfortably in that. They also play Liverpool right at the end of the season, but not before we take them on this weekend. So what we're going to do on this episode of the Chronicles of Aguna is we're going to look at Aston Villa in a bit of depth. We're going to talk about the team that I would pick to face them. We haven't had Mikel Arteta's press conference yet at the time of recording, but if there are any big stories or any big talking points from that, we'll bring you a bonus edition of the pod probably tomorrow morning. Look, the truth is, I say this every week, but every time I sort of put the pod on hold and wait for Mikel Arteta to give me a press conference, he doesn't actually give me any team news. So I figured, what's the point? We might as well get this out with as much time as possible for you guys to tune in and take it all in. So as I say, we're going to analyse Aston Villa. We're going to look at some of the statistics via the Premier League website, like we always do in the build-up to the game. I'm going to share with you guys how I think we can hurt Aston Villa. I'm going to share with you guys the lineup I would pick. And of course, we're going to do some predictions and take some of your thoughts and questions from the live chat. Before I run on to the Aston Villa analysis, let me say a few hellos, because there are plenty of you with us live right now, not just on YouTube, but on X as well. If you are watching on X, please do come over to the YouTube channel, give it a subscribe, give the video a like. If you're listening and you fancy having this in your ears as you're getting on with your day, then you can find the Chronicles of Aguna podcast every single episode on audio format as well on all the major podcast platforms, but that'll be available from once we finish the live, of course. Big hello to Afsar, to Tom. We've got Barbs in the chat. We've got Derek. We've got Glenn. We've got Hawkeye. We've got Yon Toro. We've got Dr. Pepper, one of my favorite drinks, that underrated drink. We've got loads and loads of you with us. Hawkwin says, Harry auditioning for Peaky Blinders. Do you know what? If you are watching and you're wondering why the Peaky Blinders hat, the truth is, guys, is that for the last couple of days, I just haven't been bothered to tame my wild hair at the moment. I'm trying to grow it back to how I had it before. And the problem is I'm in that really annoying, awkward in-between stage where if I want it to look semi-decent, I have to put a whole pot of gel on it and I have to stand in front of the mirror for like 15 minutes. And I just didn't have the time this morning. And to be honest, maybe I could have made the time, but I couldn't be bothered. Anyway, let's get into, of course, our Aston Villa analysis ahead of this big game at the weekend. Arsenal take on Aston Villa at the Emirates. Okay, so we'll start off by taking a look at Aston Villa's last three results. Of course, they were victorious last night in the Europa Conference League, the first leg of their quarterfinal. They beat Lille by 2-1. Ollie Watkins scored after about 13 minutes, and then John McGinn early in the second half added a second for Villa. But they did concede a goal late on, courtesy of Diakite, which keeps Lille in the tie. And look, I'll be honest with you, I thought Lille at times looked really, really threatening, particularly in that first half. I thought Lille were the ones that made the better chances and that cut through this Aston Villa team with quite a bit of ease. And we'll come on to talk about why that was a little bit later on. If we take it back to last Saturday in the Premier League, Aston Villa were held at home by Brentford. It was a 3-3 draw, a game that Aston Villa were 2-0 up in. Watkins had scored on 38 minutes and Rodgers had added on 46. Brentford found a couple of goals from Jorgensen and Mbeumo. And then, of course, Villa went down the other end, desperately trying to win it. They ended up conceding on the break to Vissa. So it was 3-2 Brentford really late on. It looked like it was going to be the comeback of all comebacks. But then, of course, Ollie Watkins managed to find a way to level the scoreline for Villa. So not a great result. And then I mentioned the Manchester City game in passing just a few minutes ago, where they were beaten comfortably by 4-1. Now, I remember after that game going on the 90 Min show and saying, look, I think that as much as it's their prerogative and they can do whatever they like, they can rest who they want, they can pick who they want, I was really, really frustrated with the team that Aston Villa put out when they took on Manchester City. And I said, oh, come on. I mean, I'm not sitting here saying there's a conspiracy or whatever. I know that Aston Villa have every right to do whatever they feel is best for them. But when I said that on the 90 Min show, you would not believe some of the stick I got from Aston Villa sort of supporters on X and in the comments section of that video, et cetera, et cetera. And yesterday, we were joined by Sam Tai, who is a Aston Villa fan, covers the club very, very closely. And he too felt that Aston Villa looked at that game and went, without Watkins, we're probably not going to win it anyway. So you know what? We'll take that one a little bit lighter than usual. That's really frustrating when you're in the title race and you're up against a side like Manchester City. What I will say is that even if Villa were at full strength, I'd have still made City overwhelming favourites. And it probably isn't going to have an impact in the end. But it is frustrating when you look at a game and you think, that's a potential banana skin for them. And all of a sudden, they're playing against a much weakened side. Now, I've mentioned the game against Lille. I've mentioned the game against Brentford. And I think the game against Brentford highlighted a lot of the defensive issues that I've referred to a little bit earlier on and throughout the season when discussing Aston Villa on different platforms. So I want to have a look at some of the goals that they conceded against Brentford, because I think what they do is that they don't tell you how the game's going to go at the weekend, but they do all highlight one particular weakness in this Aston Villa side. And it's something that I think we should be looking to capitalize on. That might mean us slightly adapting and adjusting the way we attack. But you know what? If that gives us what we need and creates the opportunities that we need to go on and win the game, then why not? Let's look at then Aston Villa's, shall I call it a leaky defence? This was Brentford's first goal. Brentford get down the left-hand side and there's a cross that comes into the penalty area. Now, as soon as I watched this goal back, even in the build-up to this point, alarm bells were ringing. I'm someone that loves defensive play. I really, really do. I know I've been critical of sides that have parked the bus. I don't think parking the bus and being really good defensively are the same thing. I think parking the bus is what teams that lack defensively do in order to try and compensate. I think you can defend sensibly, compactly, and still have the balance and be able to go out and attack teams and control possession as well. Now, when I watched this goal back, alarm bells were ringing for me in the build-up to this really, really early on. The ball is on that left-hand side. Brentford clip it into the penalty area. And there are four Brentford players inside the penalty area. Ezri Konsa has gone out towards the crosser because he wants to potentially block the cross. And then you've got two centre-backs on the edge of the six-yard box having to deal with three players who have pushed right up onto them. Another player in Mbeumo who is on the blind side of Aston Villa's midfielder who's tracking back there. And then you've got a fifth Brentford player arriving on the edge of the box. They are queuing up to score here. And what this highlights to me is that Aston Villa, and I'm not saying it just because of this particular goal. I'll show you other examples in a minute as well. But something I've noticed about Aston Villa under Unai Emery, and in particular without some of their key players. They are without Douglas Luiz this weekend. They are, I think, going to be out without Camara, maybe. But what I'm trying to say is, I've noticed an issue, an ongoing issue with Aston Villa with regards to how they track runners from deep positions. Not only in this instance are the centre-backs exposed because they've got three men within close proximity. There's a fourth on the blind side of the midfielder who's tracking back. And then there's someone arriving on the edge of the box with not a Villa player anywhere near him. It just feels like they're not picking up those runs from those deeper positions. And I think that's something that Arsenal should be looking at. If I take it on to Brentford's second goal, there's a similar scenario again. The ball comes in from that left-hand side again. On this occasion, Mbeumo watches it come out of the air. In my opinion, he's allowed to volley this into the goal way too easily. But again, you've seen a similar situation. The two centre-backs there, or the two defenders there, one is a centre-back, one is a full-back who's covering. Both of them have got men to deal with. Yet, there's no extra support. You've left them one-on-one. You've isolated them. And if you look at the edge of the box, Johan Visser and Jensen are the two guys that are entering the penalty area, entering the mix. And Visser, from his perspective, is on the right side of his man. The defender's on the wrong side. And Jensen is completely unmarked and is ghosting into that penalty area. So again, you can see that Aston Villa are struggling in this particular game to deal with those runs from deep. If I take it on and we look at Brentford's third goal, you look at it again and again, it's about the movement. They're not able to live with the movement of Brentford's forward players. There's a crossfield ball that goes out to the left wing, and at the beginning of this move, Johan Visser is positioned in between two centre-backs. Now, what he ends up doing is sort of checking his run slightly and coming inside and working himself into a position where he's completely free on the edge of the six-yard box, and all the crosser has to do is pick him up. There's a lack of communication in that back line at times. They're not passing players on to one another in terms of who they're supposed to be marking effectively enough. And there's a lack of awareness, I think, with regards to people making those runs from slightly deep areas. So I'm not saying that this is definitely going to happen on Sunday when Arsenal take on Aston Villa. But what I'm saying is, having watched them back against Brentford and having watched the game against Lille last night, who also cut through them with ease a lot of the time due to runners coming from deep and being unmarked and picking up the ball in pockets of space, I think that Aston Villa have a real problem with that. Now, that might be because of the personnel that they have available at the moment. You could argue that they don't have the players that would normally take care of that issue. But at this moment in time, I feel that that is something and somewhere we can expose Aston Villa. And it's something that we should definitely be looking at. Aston Villa's leaky defence at the moment for them is a problem. And tracking runs from deep has been a big, big issue. Okay, if we take it on and we have a little bit of a look at Aston Villa's shape, I think this is really, really interesting, because the shape looked a little bit different in the game against Brentford in comparison to what it looked like against Lille. And I think there are reasons for that. The team, I think, was the same team. Just quickly looking at it again, I think it was. Yeah, I think it was exactly the same team that started against Brentford that took on Lille last night. So if you look at the Brentford game, obviously Aston Villa were a lot more confident in that one. They're at home against a Premier League side that have struggled most of the season. And you can see that they're more willing to push up, play with a higher line, and they're more compact. What that does mean, though, by being more compact in the middle of the pitch, is that there is greater space in behind, and that there's an opportunity for your opposition to drop the ball into those channels and run into it. If you compare that to the way they set up in terms of their average positions against Lille, they dropped off a lot more. Now, I don't know if that was out of choice or if they were forced to do that, but the distances for me between their backline and their midfield against Lille were too big. And when I was talking about runs coming from deep, I was talking about people picking up the ball in those spaces in between the lines and getting themselves into one-on-one situations and getting themselves into areas where they could cause Aston Villa problems. So the issue for Villa against Lille, particularly in that first half, was the distances between the defenders and the midfielders. Against Brentford, it was different. It was let them have space in behind if they want to do that, and we'll back ourselves to get back. But when you're all rushing back, somebody has to be alert and aware of those runners coming from deep. So two different shapes against two different oppositions. Does the fact that the defenders dropped off that little bit deeper against Lille suggest that they showed them more respect? Probably. But as I say, that left space in between the lines. And we all know that Arsenal are really, really good at utilizing those spaces in between the lines. If you let Arsenal get on the ball there, they will cause you problems. They will tear you apart. If we take it on further, I do want to focus on a couple of Aston Villa players in particular, those two players being Ollie Watkins and John McGinn. I was talking to Sam Tye yesterday on the 90 Min channel. There's an Aston Villa special coming out today. I think it was great timing, given that, of course, we play them this weekend. It gave me the opportunity to learn a little bit more about them, get a little bit more insight into what makes them tick, etc., etc., etc. But one of the things that I thought was really interesting that came out of that discussion was the fact that it's clear that Ollie Watkins now stays a lot narrower in his positioning. He runs the channels a lot less than he did pre Unai Emery. And Sam Tye told me that that was something that Unai Emery has asked for from Ollie Watkins. He wants him to conserve energy. He doesn't want him chasing like a headless chicken all the time out into those channels, out into those spaces, when actually Ollie Watkins is at his best when he's in and around the penalty area and when he's on the end of chances. So I think Arsenal will be well aware of that. They'll look at that. They'll know where Watkins is going to want to station and position himself. And I don't think they're going to have as much of an issue as they did against Bayern with those runs coming from outside to in. If we take it on to John McGinn, who obviously scored the goal against us at Villa Park earlier on in the season, he seems to operate a lot at the moment in this half space on the right-hand side, where he can get the ball onto his left foot and come infield. And have a shot, try and pick someone out. Very often now, he's crossing balls in from deep positions. I think he's someone that we've got to be really, really aware of. Leon Bailey, as well, is in fine form, has had a really, really good season. I remember not so long ago people saying, Leon Bailey, what a waste of money, et cetera, et cetera. But he's really come on leaps and bounds for this Aston Villa side. So the two players that I think we have to be really wary of and aware of in terms of the positions they take up are Watkins and McGinn. I think Watkins will want to stay central where possible. Might be forced to run channels a little bit more against opposition of the caliber of Arsenal, but I think he will want to be in those areas when Villa can work it there in order to try and inflict damage. And I think McGinn, who on paper looks like a central midfielder, will drift into that right-sided half space really, really often. And we need to be alert and, of course, aware of that. I do want to talk a little bit about, you know, I've mentioned those half spaces. I've mentioned how Arsenal can utilize them. And I've talked about Villa's difficulty, shall we say, dealing with runners from deep. And I think what that calls for is maybe Arsenal to slightly adapt the way that they attack. And I'll show you what I mean by that. So if I take you over to the trusted tactics board, what I often say, particularly when Arsenal are playing against a back four, is that what Mikel Arteta likes to do in an ideal world is to position a player in between each of those pockets of space. So a player in between the left back and the left centre back, a player in between the two centre halves, a player in between the right back and the right centre back. And then, of course, using the wingers to try and maintain the width. And what we try to do is occupy everybody so that if somebody wins a one-on-one, if somebody wriggles free, we've got that advantage and we're in. Now, what I saw Unai Emery's team do at times yesterday in order to cope with Lille trying to do something similar was drop an extra man back into the defence and make it a five at times. And I think you'll probably see that from Villa this weekend at points. But I think maybe, given what we've been talking about, instead of pushing the eights up initially and having them stationed in those positions from the very beginning of attacks, perhaps this is going to be a case of having to have them sit off a little bit, working the ball out into those wide areas, working the ball into the centre forward, and then getting those guys to make those runs just that little bit later on. Because as we've highlighted, Villa seem to have a problem picking those guys up and working out and figuring out what it is they're going to do and where they're going to pop up. So maybe it's a case of instructing those players, whoever it is that plays in those 2-8 positions, to be a little bit more calculated in the way they make their runs, to maybe look to attack those spaces later on in the phase of play. I think that's going to be really interesting to see if we can do and implement something like that, something along those lines. If we go over to the Premier League's website, let's have a look at some of the statistics ahead of this one. It's a big old game, this one. It's a big one in terms of the title race, but it's a historic Premier League fixture as well. These two sides have met 57 times in Premier League history. I'll share with you the statistics in just a moment. I do want to go over to the comments section for a minute. John Daly says, Villa have always been a side I've hated playing. I don't know why. John says Villa should be forced to play a similar side to the one they put out versus City. We've had 2 days extra rest for this match, but let's be honest, the players won't want to be out of Wednesday's match. Yeah, I mean, look, it's difficult to predict at the moment, okay? I think Arsenal probably do make a couple of changes to try and freshen things up. From Aston Villa's point of view, I think with the injury issues they have and the suspensions and all of that, I'm not sure that they can make as many changes as maybe they'd like for this game. But make no mistake about it, Unai Emery will be desperate, obviously, to finish in a Champions League position. And given that, you know, Atalanta are probably going to knock out Liverpool now, that Bayer Leverkusen are probably going to knock out West Ham United now, you do feel like the fifth spot in the Premier League in terms of Champions League football is in jeopardy at the moment. So, you know, will Unai Emery look at that and feel like he can't make changes in the league, or will he still do what he's always done in these points of the season and prioritize the European competition? We're going to have to wait and see, but I think that's going to be really, really interesting, of course. Let me just share with you these statistics and we'll run through them together. Bear with me. Sharing the screen. Here we go. I'm getting much better at this tech stuff, and he says he's probably going to mess something up now. If you look at the head-to-head There have been, as I say, 57 meetings between the two sides. Arsenal well on top in terms of the overall record, 31 wins to Aston Villa's 12, and there have been 14 draws along the way. If we look at the recent meetings between these two sides, obviously there was that 1-0 defeat at Villa Park that Arsenal suffered back in December. If you go back prior to that, to the February game, where, of course, we won 4-2. Remember the Jorginho shot off the top of the crossbar and onto the back of Emi Martinez's head before ending up in the back of the net. Go back to the 31st of August, 2022. We beat them by 2-1. We beat them on Saturday, the 19th of March, 2022 at Villa Park by 1-0. And Friday, October 22nd, 2021, we beat them by 3-1. So we have won 4 of the last 5 meetings with Aston Villa. People say they're a bogey team. When you look at that, they're not really. But I think what's maybe playing on people's minds is that Unai Emery has been pretty good against Mikel Arteta. You got to say that. You know, the Villarreal thing, you know, the Villa game earlier this season, you would argue that Unai Emery is somebody that does seem to, I'm not going to say have Mikel Arteta's number, because I don't think that's fair. But what Unai Emery seems to be able to do better than a lot of other managers is understand of Mikel Arteta's system, and he's able to figure out what it is that maybe Arsenal are planning to do and come up with a plan than most in order to try and deal with that. Apologies if the sound cut there for a second. Not sure exactly what's going on. Form guide wise, Arsenal have won 4 of their last 5. Just that draw against Manchester City, sandwiched in between victories over Sheffield United, Brentford, Luton and Brighton. If you look at Aston Villa, they've only won 1 of their last 5, and that was a 2-0 victory against Wolverhampton Wanderers. They drew with Brentford last time out. They were battered at Manchester City by 4-1 in the game prior to that. They drew away at West Ham, and they were heavily beaten at home by Tottenham Hotspur. So, yeah, I think when you look at form guide, you know, there's only one team really that should be coming out on top here. Famous last words. Season so far, if you look at Arsenal, of course, first position at the minute, going into the weekend, Villa in 5th. Villa have won 18, we've won 22, they've drawn 6, we've drawn 5. They've lost 8, we've lost 4. Average goals scored per match, Arsenal are on 2.42 at the moment. And obviously that average has been significantly boosted by what we've been able to do in 2024 so far. Aston Villa, though, they've got goals in them too. They average over 2 goals per game. Average goals conceded, they're almost at double what we're at, with 1.53, Arsenal at 0.77. They've only kept 7 clean sheets. Arsenal managed 14. And according to this stat, which I always tell you is a bit of a weird one, they create just slightly under the amount of chances that we do at this moment in time on average. If you look at the top players across these two teams when it comes to goals, well, there's only one man to talk about here, and that is Aston Villa's Ollie Watkins, who we discussed a little bit earlier on. He's got 18 goals in the Premier League this season. Bukayo Saka comes in 2nd on 14, and Kai Havertz comes in 3rd on 9 when it comes to assists. Again, it's a couple of Aston Villa players right at the top of the chart. Ollie Watkins on 10. So he's got 28 goal contributions in the Premier League so far this season, which is pretty remarkable for him. Leon Bailey's in joint 2nd, though, with Bukayo Saka on 8 apiece. Tackles, Declan Rice leads the way with 61. Bukayo Saka comes in 2nd with 55. And Douglas Luiz, who Villa are going to be without, of course, comes in joint 2nd with Saka on 55 as well. So those were some of the statistics there for you. Let's take it on to the team that I would pick then to face Aston Villa this weekend. I would make a change, definitely a change. I'm considering whether we should make a couple to try and freshen things up. But I just think this is such an important game. I think it's more about being able to bring people off the bench and limit people's minutes or manage people's minutes than it is tinkering with the starting 11 too much. Does that make sense? So I think, for example, if you give somebody like Declan Rice, forget Declan Rice, he's too important. If you give somebody like Gabriel Martinelli 65 minutes, 65 minutes, 65 minutes, and you make sure that he doesn't often exceed that unless you're really desperate, and you use a Leandro Trossard, for example, to help manage that, or you do the same at fullback when you use Tomiyasu and Kivi, or maybe you do it with Ben White, maybe you do it with Tomiyasu, If you can do it that way, I think that is more effective than constantly tinkering with the starting 11. And so the team I've gone with is this. I've gone with Raya in goal. I've gone with White, Saliba, Gabriel and Kivior across the back. Partey, Odegaard and Rice in midfield. Martinelli, Havertz and Saka up front. I would have brought Gabriel Jesus back into the starting 11, but I think he should start against Bayern. I thought his impact against them when he came on was huge. He's been really good in the Champions League this year. And I think he's exactly what those two lumps of centre-backs don't want to be facing. So I think Gabriel Jesus is really important for us in that second leg in Munich on Wednesday. So for that reason, and given the comments he's been making about his knee recently, I'm a little bit worried about throwing him in from the start. We might need him against Villa at some point. We might have to utilise him at some point. But I really do think that he should probably start from the bench on Sunday. You'll notice that I've brought Thomas Partey back in the team. I think Jorginho looks gassed out at the moment. I think he needs a bit of a break. I think he needs a bit of a rest. I think he's played in games that haven't necessarily suited him. And what Mikel Arteta has been really good at doing since we brought Jorginho in is making sure that he isn't in those games, but he's in the ones that do suit him. And therefore, we've seen the best version of Jorginho more often than not. However, I think that Thomas Partey being back is massive. And I understand that we're trying to be cautious. And I understand that we're trying to slowly manage him back to fitness. But guys, we are running out of games. Like, if you're not going to use him now at the real business end of the season, then what is the point? So maybe you're going to have to take a bit of a gamble. Perhaps you're going to have to push his boundaries a little bit. But he's been back training for a long time now. He's been on the pitch quite a bit from the substitutes bench. He needs to be fit enough to start a game. I'd probably start him in Munich as well. And maybe that'll put Mikel Arteta off of picking him in this one. Maybe he'll look at Villa's team and say, well, Douglas Luiz isn't there, so I can get away with Jorginho. Maybe he'll do it that way. I don't know. But for me, you need to be building Thomas Partey up to the point where he's starting in midfield with Rice and Odegaard on Wednesday night in Munich. Saka, really, really important part of the team, needs to continue on the right wing for me. Havertz's form dictates to me that he continues up front. And Gabriel Martinelli, I didn't think had the greatest game, by the way, the other day, but I think he's important in terms of stretching teams and giving us that more direct approach and outlet, etc., etc., I think should probably play as well. So that's my starting 11 to face Aston Villa this weekend. Let me know what you think in the comments. Do you agree? Do you disagree? Here is my prediction as well for you. I'm going to go for Arsenal 2, Aston Villa 0. That's what I'm going with. I think we win. I think it's one of those games where you'll be hoping to get yourself into a position whereby you can not take your foot off the gas, but then just manage the game in a way that allows you to maybe get people off and get people sort of prepared ahead of Wednesday night's game. You can't prioritise at this point, right? You're in the two biggest competitions. You're in with a chance of winning both of them. We're top of the Premier League. We're going away to Munich in a one-off game in the second leg of a quarterfinal and potentially could book our place in the semi-final. You can't be looking at this and going, I'm going to prioritise this one or I'm going to prioritise that one, because whatever decision you make, it's the wrong decision. You have to find a way of being as close to your absolute maximum as possible across both of those games. And that's why Mikel Arteta gets paid the big bucks, right? To try and figure that out and to try and figure the best way to do that out. But yeah, it's going to be a really, really big few days for us. It feels like every game's a cup final, as I've already mentioned. I can't wait to see where we end up. Hopefully we're talking about a really positive week for the Arsenal. Okay, guys, I am going to leave it there because I am a little bit pushed for time today. But we will be back with another brief episode of the podcast tomorrow, which will be focused on something more topical. We'll pick a topic. We'll go in on a little bit more detail on it. I look forward to doing that with you guys as well. Let me know your thoughts and your predictions for the Villa game in the comments section below, and I will catch you all very, very soon with more. Until the next one, have a great Friday. Don't be too nervous. We are at home. We are up against a team that, in my opinion, we should be beating, a team that are lacking in terms of some of their key players. Won't be easy, and we should never be naive or complacent, but you want to win the league. This is not one of the games that you can afford to drop points in. It's as simple as that for me. So fingers crossed Arsenal can go out and do the job. I'll catch you all soon on the next one. Take care of yourselves. Happy Friday, everybody. Goodbye.